It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It is California Wine Country, the twice awarded, internationally awarded radio segment on wine. California Wine Country brought to you by our friends at Bottle Barn, the wine buyer for Bottle Barn. Barry Herbst is here. And, of course, Tom Simino. This is his week. He's presenting...
Spraggia.
Spraggia
Family Winery.
Ed, is that Italian?
Yeah, we're from Lucca.
Ah. My real name's Vicario, and we're from the Naples area. So,
is that Naples,
Paisan?
Florida?
Just down the road.
You know, what's funny is my parents moved from Detroit to Naples, Florida.
You're kidding.
No, back in the 70s, yeah.
Well, they went back home again.
Yeah,
they said
exactly.
You can't go back home.
No. Ed is here, Spraggia, with his son Adam. It's Spraggia Family Vineyard. He worked for many, many years at Behringer, and we're going to find out all the details here in just a moment. Also, we're excited to have Mark Chelicheff here. I'll tell you, in the 8 years of doing this segment, no name, I believe, has been dropped on this show more than Andrei Chelicheff. Thousands and thousands of times. And now, Mark, you got a... is he here?
He stepped away for a moment, but he'll be back.
Okay. Dan, you were saying he has a documentary.
He has a documentary.
About his uncle, Andrei Chelicheff.
Yeah, and the documentary actually airs for the first time this coming Monday at the Mill Valley Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
And we're going.
Here's Mark now.
Yeah,
come on in, Mark.
Mark, grab a mic.
Grab a mic and just...
Good afternoon.
It's great to meet you, man. So your uncle was Andrei Chelicheff.
Great uncle.
Great uncle. Yes, okay, because he passed away at 93, I believe. How long ago?
1992 and 1994.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
Oh, he passed away twice?
Yeah.
No, you said 92.
He was 92 years old.
At 94. I'm sorry.
Right. He was born in 1901. So.
Oh, God. Well, I want to get into... I can't wait to see this this movie and talk more about Andrei Chelicheff. As I said, no name has been dropped as often on this show in 8 years than Andrei Chelicheff. And I don't know all that much about him. I've Googled him, and I can't wait to see this documentary. We'll talk more about that. It's debuting at the Mill Valley Film Festival. So, Mark, thanks so much for coming in.
It's a great pleasure.
Dan says you live in Europe?
I'm now based in Berlin. That's where I finished the film, and the film premiered at Berlinale, which is one of the three premier film festivals in Europe. The Berlin International Film Festival, it premiered in February, and it was one of five films out of 600 with a gala dinner, and we had 100 bottles of more wine that brought over from California. It was a grand event. It was fantastic.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Asia and in California.
In Sonoma County area, northern wine country?
No, in Lafayette, actually.
Oh, okay.
And then I would spend a lot of time in Napa and with Andre as well, driving around in his 240Z, which you'll, he had this, which he flew. When the last time he flipped it, his wife said, okay, that's enough now. I mean, I think he was 88 at the time.
Really?
Yes. You'll see that in the film.
Oh, my God.
But, of course, he blamed the driver in front of him for that flip. You know that story.
Even John Ash is here, for goodness sakes. Everyone's hanging around.
Greatest hits here.
Yeah. Okay. If you can chill a little bit, we're going to... do this, and you join us for tasting some of this wine, and then we got to talk more about your great uncle and this film and his life story, because it's fascinating.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for driving
up. It's going to be a 3-hour show today.
Yeah.
We're going to need it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Ed.
Sir.
How long? Well, you were, I think Tom said 30 years at Behringer?
I was there 32 years.
At Behringer.
Fastest 32 years in history.
Wow.
I started in 1976 and I left in 2008.
And how long has your family vineyard been around?
We started, actually, Behringer was very gracious to me. It was a great place to work.
Well, they should be after 32 years of service.
And we're drinking one now, a 91.
And it's a wow.
It's a killer wine.
It's coming. It's coming. That a nice thing about a big bottle of wine is you got to let it unfurl. It's like a rose, and it takes a little time. You have to be patient. Anyway, I was we started making wine in 2001, first released in 2004. I got Adam to come work for me. And when?
The first time I went and started with Behringer was in 2000, and then when we started Custom Crush again in 2001, I was able to work there as well as at San Clemente with Aaron Pott and Souverain with Ed Killing before Coppola bought the place. And then I moved back over to Behringer in 2004 to work on the private reserve Chardonnay and Cab with my dad, and also then solely control the Spraggia wines.
And then we bought the facility at the end of Dry Creek Road. We were right next to the Warm Springs Dam. We see we have the best dam view around.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah. You do.
In 2006. So we've been there ever since.
Tom, your thoughts on Spraggia?
You know, Ed once told me that when he finishes fermentation, he likes to let the skins and everything just soak so he can extract everything he can out of the fruit that he's got. And some of his wines are so beautifully concentrated and balanced at the same time that you can see why, as we're tasting this 91, how long they can live and how a great winemaker can produce a wine that can 91, 2001. I mean, how old is it? I mean, it's amazing.
Since I got a calculator, I can't do that.
26 years.
26 years, and this wine is...
It's still a baby.
It's a beauty.
It still needs more time.
Yeah.
And it's in a magnum, which is a wonderful thing because they age much slower in a magnum.
Right, yeah, surface area to volume ratio. It's the same cork space, but it's a double the volume.
Yeah, with that little air space, the ullage there is about the same.
What's impressive about this wine is the level of fruit. I remember the vintage pretty well. It was a really good vintage. It was relatively long, but not really long. It was 90 and 91 were back-to-back excellent vintages, and 90 was a little bit more voluptuous, but I think 91 had a little bit more staying power, and this one sure shows that because the fruit level is really right up there.
In those early 90s, remember 90 and 92 and then 94 were all those kind of round, rich, early maturing wines, and everybody talked about 1 and 3 back then as the wines that will age, and this is proving to be true.
Yeah, and I think the best part about 91 is the fact that it had better structure when it came out, when it first released. But remember, in those days, we were on a four-year release cycle. So this wine didn't get released until 1995, and so you were looking at this wine 4 years old, opposed to today's world, we were releasing them at 2.5 years.
Yeah, if you even go that far.
I'm still kind of on a four-year release cycle.
As it should be.
All right. Reiterate what this is.
This is 1991 Behringer Private Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon in a magnum. And this stuff is like just pure silk. And it's got Cabernet character in the aroma. It's got Cabernet character in the mid palate. And it's got the great, beautiful finish in the aftertaste to give you the opportunity to pair it up with some food.
Those secondary flavors are phenomenal.
Most of the vineyards came from the hillsides, from on both sides, on the west side and on the east side, Howl Mountain. So that those vineyards tended to be up high, above 1,000 feet. All the topsoils come down, so they're very restrictive. You had restricted vines that were actually suffering to produce grapes, so you didn't really have to mess with them. They produced pretty intense, balanced wines, and Dan said the word balance, and that's key.
Yeah. Ed and his son Adam Spraggia are here from Spraggia Family Vineyard. We're tasting this early 90s cab that, is, as Dan said, is in a magnum. I'm so in love with this Chard that they brought, but
right,
I do have to taste this.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Just give me a little teeny...
I think the secret to this wine is the fact that it's still a baby. I mean, it's still young. Most people would say 26 years, time to drink it. Not this wine.
Wow.
Dan's got about 2.5 cases of Magnums in his cellar. He was going to be hitting it soon, but now he's going to wait.
Yeah, well, that's why I call him Dan Lay It Down Burger. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
He's the most patient wine expert I've ever heard of in my life. Mark Chelichev is here. His great uncle was Andrei Chelichev. We're going to talk about that in just a few moments. I find this so fascinating. And Andrei Chelyachev, it says here, was America's most influential post-prohibition winemaker. And I can't believe I finally learned how to pronounce the name, because it's spelled T-C-H-E-L-I-S-T-C-H-E-F-F, Chelyachev. And Mark, I have to spell my real last name, Vicario, constantly. V as in Victor, I-C-A-R-I-O. You must be, you know, spelling this sucker all the time.
Oh, never. Well, if they can't spell it, I know it's a telemarketer.
Well,
if they
done.
Can't say it, I definitely know it's a telemarketer.
Mark,
no, of course. I mean, and of course, in the States they say Chelyachev. In Russia they say Chelyachev. It's a French spelling of a Cyrillic name. And you know, Andre spoke with a very wonderful accent, you know, which was a mix of this French Russian accent. And you know, here, he ended up saying Chelyachev because people had a hard time saying Chelyachev.
Yeah, so. Exactly, of course. I've just learned Chelyachev, actually.
That's a new one for me.
Yeah, and it was wonderful when I did my, as you know, in the film, you probably read, Ralph Fiennes was narrating for me. And we did about 10, 12 times each line, and he was like a Stradivarius working with him. He had such an ability to change the mood and tone the way I wanted it, you know, whether it was melancholy or upbeat. And, you know, we decided to go with Chelyachev, the Russian way of saying it.
Wow.
And when he's, you know, narrating the film. So
the movie's coming out when? Monday?
Well, we're having the film premiered already. It had a world premiere in Berlinale, Berlin International Film Festival. It's been in Moscow. Moscow International Film Festival was in the biggest film festival in Poland and in Sofia. It's premiering now at Mill Valley Film Festival on the 9th of October at 6:45 p.m., but I believe the tickets are sold out. I'm not sure.
So are we going to be able to see it here in Sonoma? I mean,
and then it'll have another screening at the Raphael Theater on October 13th.
In San Rafael.
In San Rafael.
Yeah.
And then in Larkspur on the 14th at 6:15 p.m. So those who want to see it now, you know, grab your tickets, because a lot of the people who didn't get back to me in the last week, you know, they were like, what about tickets? And I said, well, I'm not in control of that. Mill Valley is.
What about streaming? Is it going to sometime
be
released?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I have one of the best, I'd say, documentary agents working with me on this, Annie Roney of Rocco Films, and we'll see what offers come in. We have some interest from some of the big boys, and hopefully one of them will come through. And, you know, I've put 10 years of my life in this film.
Wow.
I started filming on, what was it, March 9th, 2007, at the first Vintners Hall of Fame. And it ends up that none of that footage went in my film. I had over 300 hours of material. So you have to think about when you're making, it's like wine, you know. I planted these seeds, and then in time it was very organic the way it grew. It's been a journey in itself.
Oh, I can imagine.
In the meantime, in 10 years, I've now been married and have two kids, and I lived in Russia to work on the film because I wanted to bring back the essence, let's say, of where Andre came from, his terroir, so to speak. And I have all original music. I worked with one of the best Russian composers living today. And also then we had orchestras. So everything in that film I did, and I shot with helicopters, not drones, found Andre's the original vehicle Andre crossed over the first time in 1938, which was a 1925 or 26 Cadillac that Georges de La Tour and his wife brought Andre over the Golden Gate for the first time to Napa Valley. And I found that car. It was restored, and that's in the film. So there's a lot of historical fact in the film that people won't know that that's exactly that car.
So I want to see the movie with you.
Yeah.
I'll bring the wine.
Yeah.
All right. This is so cool.
And more importantly, there's winemakers like yourself here in the film that were touched by Andre, and I hope that I captured his spirit, because that's what the film is about, Andre's spirit, his spirit of sharing, his spirit and love of wine and of people.
I've only heard amazing things about him from people who actually had the chance to meet him. But yeah, we'll get back into more of Andre Chelyachev. Did I say that right? I didn't say the Russian.
That's close.
Chelyachev.
Yeah.
in the American way.
His great nephew, Mark, made this movie. I don't want to get personal here, but how the hell did you finance this thing? We're talking Ralph Fiennes. And helicopters, and holy crap, man.
Well, that's part of the reason it took 10 years, because I did it mainly on my dime, and then a lot of people stepped in later on helping me. Became executive producers. I had Russians who stepped in and paid for everything in Russia. I had a lawyer in Thailand who jumped in and paid a big chunk. And then I'm very thankful to Mike Gergich, Violet Gergich, and Austin Hills. They stepped in and they helped provide some funding so I could finish the film.
And they're huge in our wine world.
And they're the ones who really stepped up. I got a little funding from Jordan in the very beginning.
Nice.
Tom Jordan. And others have, of course, you know, been kind with their time, and it's been an incredible journey of wine as well, because
I've been
able to spend time with people like Dan and others, and also with the winemakers, drinking beautiful wines like this 91 Behringer, with the winemakers who made the wine, and that is an experience that you cannot exchange for any money.
I want to, and we will after the bottom of the hour break, we got to talk more about the life of Andrei Chelyachev. Ed Spragia and his son Adam are here from Spragia Family Vineyard. They have some amazing stuff going here. And that Chardonnay and Dan Lay It Down Burger, Steve Chardonnay Jackson, that's how we talk about each other around here. This Chardonnay is just spectacular. Let me dump this.
Okay. Here, let me put
this. Is this the one you poured?
I'm going to give you a little of this to clean your glass.
Okay.
And then we'll pour the Chardonnay for you.
Okay. Thank you. By the way, Barry Herbst is here, too, our co-host and wine buyer at Bottle Barn. This is brought to you by Bottle Barn every week. It's California wine country. And I mentioned when I said we were twice awarded the Taste Award, International Taste Award, over the last couple of years for broadcast excellence in the world of wine. And I mentioned we'll probably be nominated again this year. And then Mike gave me the, oh, God, I screwed up look. And then he texted me just a few moments ago. There was 15 minutes left for the deadline for this year, and he got us in. So,
and if they're listening today, we're going to win.
Yes, no kidding.
Well, the wine's like this.
Okay, so
tell us about this, Ed.
Let me just regress a little bit about Andrei Chelyachev. I remember my first time. I was working at Fopiana Wine Company in 1975, and Andrei was a consultant with Marianne Graf up at Simi. So I got this little pink powder at the bottom of a bottling tank. It had been filtered. It was totally clean. And it wasn't filter powder or anything. It was slimy. It was yeast. So I went up there, and he looked underneath, and he said, pink yeast. I said, how do I do that? And he says, well, they live on each other, and they grow, and they'll grow in a bottle.
This was Andre.
This was Andre.
Wow.
And then another time, I had to give a history of the Napa Valley in front of Andre in a room. And I went, Andre, we're going to switch chairs here. I'm not going to do this. But I did. I did my little chronology, and he was very kind.
You probably had to change your underwear after that.
Anyway, this is our 2013 Gamble Ranch Chardonnay, and this I've crushed every year since my first year at Behringer's, 1976. So it's been 43 years every year from the same block, block 15. You walk around in the wintertime, it's black clay. Mm. Stick to your boots or your shoes or your feet.
And where is it?
It's a vineyard that belonged to the Gamble Ranch, Gamble family, and it's between Yountville and Oakville. Mm-hmm. Huh. And it's a slightly warmer area for Chardonnay, but it produces a very massive wine. So I felt early on after having French white Burgundies, and I was at DRC, and the guy told me exactly how they made it. And I said, did you ever tell anybody else? And he says, no. I said, how come? He said, no one ever asked.
So this is red wine with no color.
Well, it's a red winemaker's white wine.
Really?
You know, my dad always used to say, who was a winemaker in the 30s and then a farmer later? White wine's just a wine to make your mouth ready to drink the red. So, or you could finish the reds and come back to this wine. But this is such a big wine that tasting wines like DRC, they're fermented in brand new barrels. They're aged for over 15, 18 months. This is 18 months in barrels. And I used to stir the leaves once a month, but Adam changed it to once a week because he thought it was better, and we could top the barrel each time we did it, which means you fill the barrel up, which my dad had two rules: keep the winery full and keep it clean. So he's taken that to heart.
All right, yeah. Well, how about that? I just spilled something, and oh boy. Am I going to get electrocuted by this computer? Yes, probably. Those are used Kleenexes. Here we go. Okay. It is California Wine Country, Spragia Family Vineyard. Ed Spragia and his son Adam are here. Tom Simino has brought them in. Dan Berger is my co-host. Barry Herbst, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn. It is brought to you by Bottle Barn.
And Jackson has just taken a shower here in the studio.
Hey, look,
Chardonnay shower.
9 years we've been doing this, and I don't think I've ever spilled before. Because I got so many plugs and cords and things, and luckily it's... Yeah, here we go.
Well, we were talking about the Chardonnay.
Wait a minute. Ed, Adam, yes, I noticed your slogan on the website is 1 foot in Napa, 1 foot in Sonoma, basically. I like that. Explain where you guys are.
Well, we're at the end of Dry Creek Valley, and we grew up in Dry Creek. Why don't you tell me about Dry Creek?
Well, I'm lucky enough to live in the same house that my dad was raised in, I was raised in, and now I'm raising my kids in. So,
cool.
A lot of people don't realize that even though my father worked at Behringer for 35 years, we've always lived in Hillsburg. We've always lived in the Dry Creek Valley. That's where my great-grandfather came over in the 1880s and worked at Asti, the Italian Swiss colony, and where my grandfather was born, and where my dad learned to work in the fields and work in the old hop and prune fields before there was grapes and French Colombard and now Chardonnay and Merlot and Zin. And then where he decided that he didn't want to be a farmer and that those rows were too long and went over to Gallo and they taught him how to be a winemaker. And he went back to school and got his degrees from UC Davis and Fresno State and went to Behringer and couldn't get another job. So they let him hang around and I got to grow up on both sides, whether it was on the tractor or over at the winery, and then got to figure out my own way, and now we're lucky enough to have our own winery with our own name on it in Dry Creek. So that's sort of why we have a foot in both sides. You know, even though we are from Dry Creek, we made a lot of wine in Napa Valley, and we have a lot of cabs at the winery. We don't just make Zin from Dry Creek, which we love to do, and that's the wine we grew up drinking in the back of the barn with my grandfather. But we have a lot of cabs from Mount Veeder, Howe Mountain. You know, those are the wines that made us famous, him famous. I like to ride his coattails every once in a while.
And well, you should. Well, he's your dad.
You know, as Spragia, we like to deconstruct all those great vineyards that he made private reserve out of. So we have a lot of great single vineyard wines, whether it's cabs from Napa, shards from Gamble Ranch that we're trying, or shards from in Napa, or shards from Dry Creek, or all their single vineyards in. So we have access to a lot of great vineyards. That's why we have 1 foot in Napa and 1 foot in Sonoma County.
Dan, talk about this shard.
This is
a 2013, right?
Yeah, but it's the ultimate full-on, full-bore, everything going for it. Very rich, very unctuous, like Batard Montrachet.
That's my favorite wine.
Exactly what I was thinking when I tried it. Because
I'm never going to be able to make a Batard, but
well, not that's from California fruit, but we're going to get close, and that's the closest it gets. And the reason is that all the lees contact, all the stirring, all the oxygen that it got initially, almost it was like predicting the wine. When you tasted it in the barrel, you said, "Wait a minute, it needs a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that," and then it needs time and bottle. Now, this is a new wine. This is just out. So you're still selling this wine. But you imagine how this will age? It'll be beautiful. It's like I said, it's red wine with no color, so it needs a little bit more time. I'd think about 3 to 5 more years, it would be fabulous.
I've had some that are 10 years old and they're still good. And I typically, a Chardonnay, after 5 years, they get kind of oily, and if they don't have stuff, this had a lot of stuff, and that's why I abused it with all that winemaker technique.
it's absolutely,
it's
delicious in this style.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's the wonderful thing. I'm a red wine guy, But when I'm drinking whites, I want to have something with character and a lot of complexity. And this wine, like, fits the bill, man. Perfect.
There are lots of people who were reared in the 1980s and 90s with this kind of wine. A lot of this style has gone out because it's very complicated, very difficult to make, and it's also expensive to make.
Well, yeah. I mean, keeping white wine in barrels for 2 years and then aging it for another 6 months to a year in a bottle.
Plus all the new oak that's necessary to make it.
Yeah, this is 100% new French oak. I mean,
100%?
100% new French oak.
I'm not going to tell you what oaks because that's proprietary.
Actually, it's
Dami and Francois Fer.
All right, there we go.
Dami and Francois Fer.
Dami and Francois Fer.
Another geek alert. Don't worry about it.
And by the way, this really is an amazing wine. Any of you out there, any of the staff who wants to taste it, just lick my keyboard on my laptop. There you go. It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Barry Herbst, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn, has crammed into this crowded studio. Tom Simino is here with our friends from Spragia Family Vineyard, Ed and his son Adam. Boy, this is some amazing wine you gentlemen have made, and we will continue to taste in a moment. Mark Chelichev is here, and his great uncle was Andrei Chelichev. And as I said earlier, thousands and thousands of times on this segment over the many years, his name has probably popped up or dropped more than anyone I can think of. The guy was just an icon, not only in the world, but he wound up here in California. And Mark has spent years and years making a documentary about his great uncle. What's the name of it?
Andrei, the Voice of Wine.
Nice. I like that.
Well, the Voice of Wine comes from an interview he did with Ruth Taser. I don't know if you're familiar with all those interviews. And at the end, she mentions that, you know, how would he be remembered? And he says, well, maybe through the Voice of Wine. Yeah. So, and that's in the film and him saying it at the very end.
Beautiful.
I won't say anything more else about the end so people can see the film for themselves.
Okay, now it's premiering at the Mill. Well, it's premiered all over, but in various areas, including Berlin, where you live. But it'll be next week at the Mill Valley Film Festival.
That's correct. We're having our North American premiere at the Mill Valley Film Festival on October 9th. And very excited about that. In fact, I'm also nervous because a lot of the winemakers that I interviewed will be coming.
Of course.
From Dick Peterson to Michael Salacci, you know, Greg LaFollette, Rob Davis, Rick Sayer. Gergich may or may not be able to make it. Depends on how he feels, Mike Gergich. All of them, and hopefully Marianne Graf, who you mentioned earlier, who was working, was the first woman winemaker to mm-hmm. graduate from UC Davis, and Andrea hired her right out of there to work at CIMI. And Allison Doran Green, who was the daughter at the time of the owner of CIMI. So all of these people will be at my film, and I hope when they see it, it's a big moment for me.
No, I'm sure it will
be. I hope that they'll feel that I captured his spirit, which was, he was an amazing man.
Well, and this is what I've been hearing for eight, 9 years, and I don't know enough about him. Give us the whole story, because it's fascinating.
And, of course, all of us here in the studio will all be getting a ticket as well. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you're going to
Mike and I have juice.
That's wet, and you know.
Yeah.
No, it's been blessed.
I have juice with the Sonoma, with the Mill Valley Film Festival.
Oh, there
we have them on every year. So.
You know, you go to Mill Valley Film Festival website, and you'll find under the Valley of the Docks on the top page there, on the Andrei, the Voice of Wine.
All right, now give us the history. I mean, how did all this begin? He was born
in Russia,
yeah,
of an aristocratic family in 1901. His father was a judge of the Supreme Court.
Not a wine judge.
Not a wine judge. But they drank a lot of wine. They had the family being, you know, fairly, let's say, they were well-to-do and of stature. They always had wine and always had champagne and probably some vodka along the way, too. But Andrei used to go around and finishing the glasses of champagne. They used to drink, you know, various French wines, mainly French wines, but he was also given a vineyard as a young man
wow.
in Crimea. So there was a large connection to wine from his early age. He almost died in the Civil War, the Russian Civil War after the revolution. He survived three revolutions.
Sheesh.
And he was left for the dead. And the family received he passed away, but actually he hadn't. He was saved by a Cossack, threw him over his horse, and he came back to life. So he had Lord. Many of these experiences.
I'm amazed somebody hasn't made a Hollywood motion picture
about this. Yeah.
About this whole story. But
threw him over a horse will. And brought we him back to
will.
Life.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we will.
Yeah.
Is his name Jesus Christ or what?
I can't wait to see the documentary. Continue, please.
So then with the other 270,000 troops that escaped Russia during the Civil War and went to Constantinople, they were languishing in the port there in Constantinople, now known as Istanbul. And then once they got off, you know, he was just trying to survive, working, delivering laundry. And as, you know, Alison Green Doran mentioned, you know, he always talked about his punaises, which are the little bed bugs, because, you know, he was sleeping underneath the benches. He hadn't, you know, he was coming from everything, then lost everything.
And how old, basically, at this
point? He was 1901, and he left 1920, so he's 19 years old
wow.
when he left Russia.
Wow.
And he never went back. He also fought in the Bulgarian, let's say, civil war, keeping the king in power there. And then later on went to university in Brno, in Czechoslovakia. His first work in wine was in Tokaj.
And where's Tokaj?
In Hungary. And then he worked in Dubrovnik in the in an agricultural institute. And then later on went and, you know, was at Montpellier. And then his love was husbandry and farming. And he wrote three books on poultry, on how to make foie gras and all of this. It's amazing.
Holy
And
man.
But his farm.
I knew I liked him.
He was a farmer at heart. Yeah. And his farm was destroyed by what he said, hailstorm the size of quail eggs. And all the animals were killed. And, of course, he and his best friend, Prince Trubetskoy, they lost everything. And, of course, the banks wanted it. You know, there were where's our money? And
yeah.
So they had to sell out. And because of that, he went back to wine. And then he went back to the Pasteur Institute. And, you know, that if you ever go to Paris, and there's a little vineyard in Paris. He was taking care of that vineyard and doing experiments there in the middle of Paris.
When did he come to California?
In 1938, September of 1938.
And quickly explain that.
Well, one of the story goes, which I didn't put in the film because I have Andre telling how it went. And as Christian Moex once mentioned about Andre, he was, this is Christian's quote, he was a teacher to us all in winemaking and modesty. So Andre was always very modest about what he did and about his own life. But the story is that Georges de Latour went to France looking for a French winemaker, and he went to Professor Marseille, who was one of the top enologists and professors in wine at the time in the 30s, and asked him, you know, I'd like my best, you know, your best French winemaker to come back. And he said, do you want my best French winemaker or do you want my best winemaker? And he recommended Andre. So the stateless Russian refugee was invited to America. And one of the evenings when Georges de Latour was in Paris, Francis Perkins, who was the, it's not the minister, what is she, Secretary of Agriculture, told him at the U.S. Embassy, there's no way you're going to bring your winemaker. We need American people working in America. So here's, again, an incredible immigrant story, because Georges de Latour got on the phone with his senator and said, listen, I want my winemaker here and get him here. So I have all these original telexes getting Andre to America. And he arrived.
Wow.
And didn't, you know, came across, he came to first, the first taste of BV was actually in the cellars in New York City and, you know, under by the trains and the barrels were shaking and, you know, but he was surprised at the quality. And then came by train across America and was picked up in San Francisco in this 25 or 26 Cadillac driven across, and that was his first view of Napa Valley. And he said he went to the most beautiful place ever, which is, of course, the residence at Beaulieu. It was just an incredible place to come to, and with the servants and the white gloves and all this, you know, this French ambiance. And
after what he'd been through, holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, then he went to the winery, and he found what, after a year, he almost left.
Really?
One of the people which you speak about, and that's in the film, was when Maynard Amarine kind of tried to convince him to stay in America. Because he said, you know, he was being lifted up by the, at that time, you know, De La Tour was very Catholic, and so he had the Vatican guards working for him, and they were big guys, and Andre was not that short, as they say. He wasn't 4'7", he was 5'3" or so. But they would pick him up because he, you know, was telling them what to do, and they didn't like it. And, you know, he changed out everything. You know, they had rusty iron pipes and the whole winery. I mean, so he brought this sense from his French winemaking and from his technical side, also the cleanliness and these ideas of how to make wine on the technical side, but also bringing in the viticulture. He was talking about ecology in the 30s when no one else was.
Wow.
He was way ahead of his time.
Obviously, yeah, man. Wow. And that's why he's so revered and iconic today.
You have to remember that Prohibition ended in 33 and Andre got here in 38. So we were still gearing up. It's like it's like turning an ocean liner in the middle of the ocean. It takes forever.
Hmm.
And what a story. I need to see this movie.
I do too, man.
So there's six. Can I mention this? Six wineries in Napa Valley. Then how many are there now in Napa Valley? 400,
6,000. I don't know.
That's why he had such a great impact, because he was also the first one to open up a lab in Napa Valley. He also had a chicken. At one point he bought chickens to have a chicken farm, but the chicken seed was so expensive that he realized that he wasn't making money on his chickens, so he opened up a lab.
Did he do anything with Sonoma County?
Huge impact.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah,
you know, Dr. Dick Peterson has the book The Winemaker, and he talks about all of his time.
He's coming on Monday.
He's going to be there Monday. Yeah,
he's been on the show.
Yeah, we had Dick talking about his book, The Winemaker.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's another side of everything. You know, like Ed was just talking about his experience, and there are so many. You know, Jordan and all these other Simi and every place that he helped.
Rodney Strong, Rick Sayre,
Buena Vista.
I mean, he owned 50% of Buena Vista Winery.
Did he really?
Yes. When Frank Bartholomew.
Yeah, he never got paid. He got shares of ownership.
No, but then he got bought out, and then Frank, being a good businessman, sold the winery a few years later for about $4 million, I understand, and Andre didn't get any of that.
Yeah.
But Andre took it out of the cobwebs. It was in cobwebs for decades.
Wow.
And brought it back to life.
So did he live in Napa County?
He lived in Napa.
What part?
Well, he lived in different areas. At one point, when he first arrived, he lived in this, what they call the Yellow House, which is right across from BV. And then he lived in St. Helena. Right on the main road in St. Helena, and then later on down in Napa, and he died in Napa, and he's buried in, you know, in St. Helena. So
wow,
he's as one person said, and that's in my film. You know, he's buried beneath Rutherford dust.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I can't wait to check out this film. It is premiering next week at the Mill Valley Film Festival, and then hopefully at some point we'll all be able to stream it as they wait for the all the big shots to come in and say, here's what we're going to do.
I hope not, actually. I hope everybody sees it in a theater.
Well, I would much rather do that.
I made this film for the theater. It is, I shot it on the best cameras I could find at the time. And then also the music is all original with Dolby 5.1. And when you go in and hear the sound mix, also one of the greatest filmmakers in the world to me helped me finish the film with his great advice, which is Walter Murch, who edited Apocalypse Now, the Godfather movies, The English Patient. And he's the one I'm so thankful for.
What's the website for people wanting to, because we're running out of time here.
AndreTheVoiceOfWine.com.
All right.
AndreTheVoiceOfWine.com.
That's the name of the movie. Mark Chelichev, the great nephew of the amazing Andre Chelichev. Google Andre. The problem is you need to start with T-C-H. Because I wrote it phonetically, C-H-E-L-L-A-S-H-E-F, but it's T-C-H-E-L-I-S-T-C-H-E-F-F-M-O-U-S-E. So you'll find it. Just Google them and then look at even just the Wikipedia page, and then go see this film next week at the Mill Valley Film Festival. Mark Chelichev, man, an honor to meet you, and I can't wait to see this film.
I really look forward to all of you seeing the film, and I hope that the audiences will love the film. I put my heart and passion in it, and I hope that Andre's protégés and people who knew him will find that I captured his spirit. Thank
sure
you so
you
much for having me on,
it's
the,
our
on,
pleasure,
on the show, and thank you for sharing such beautiful wine here today. Your wines are really lovely. They really lovely.
He's talking to
Andre
Ed Despragia.
And he helped me a lot. So
yeah,
cheers to that.
That's so cool, Ed, having some actual personal Andre stories from your great wine career. All right, Tom Simino is chomping at the bit to talk about this wine. But first, and now he's going to.
But first.
Are you going to give me the finger?
Am I going to?
No. You can.
We're about to taste the 2013 Monterosso Vineyards Spraja Cabernet Sauvignon. This is Moon Mountain Vineyard out there in Sonoma Valley. Monterosso, one of the most wonderful vineyards out there. Ed, tell us about this wine.
Now, Monterosso is one of my favorite wines. The vineyard manager was my father's best friend, so I did more damage than good out there playing with his kids. And then I played in a band with Mike Martini, Louis Martini's son. We called ourselves Okie Bunghole and the Lactones. But later on, we...
Can you get the band back together
and bring them in here?
We
became sophisticated, and we became Private Reserve.
Private Reserve.
Oh,
so anyway...
actually seen you guys play.
You're
a better winemaker, man.
Yeah, my cellar guys always said, you better have a day job, Ed.
Yeah.
Monterosso is probably, to me, the Grand Cru of Sonoma County. It's up about 1,000 feet just out of Sonoma on the eastern side, and then basically the Mayacamas Mountains. And
right on the other side of Mount Meter.
I thought instead of calling it Moon Mountain, which they call now because that was Valley of the Moon,
right.
So the hillside above it was Moon Mountain, I thought it was going to be Mount Veeder, Sonoma, but nobody in Sonoma wanted that because of obvious reasons, I guess. Anyway, at band practice, I drank Monterosso going back to the 40s, and I just fell in love with it. And
wish I was in that band. We just got the 1 minute warning. I'm sorry, guys.
It's got a lot of structure. It's full flavor, and
you can go up to your winery.
Yeah, we sell it
at the winery.
Yeah, you take Heelsburgo, as they used to say. Go out 10 miles to the end of Dry Creek Road. Just before the dam.
Take a right and drive up the hill.
Go up the hill and come and drink Spraja wines at Spraja Family Vineyards.
That's for Ed and Adam.
Ed Spraja and his son Adam from Spraja Family Vineyard. Check it out. There's some amazing stuff. We will have you guys back on.
Thank you very much for having us.
Mark
really
Chelichev, pleasure to meet you, man.
It's a great pleasure. I hope to see you all, everybody at the movies.
Okay,
and bringing great wine.
Get to Mike, my producer, your number in Berlin, so we could give you a call from time to time and update what's going on. Tom Simino, love you, buddy.
Adios.
Dan Berger, see you next week.